This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Lenny Kaye has played guitar with Patti Smith's band since she started performing 30 years ago, and he produced the influential garage band anthology Nuggets. But his latest work is a book about the 1930s crooner Russ Colombo and his contemporaries Bing Crosby, Rudy Vallee, and Al Jolson. It's called You Call It Madness, The Sensuous Song of the Croon. We invited Lenny Kaye to talk with us about his new interest in crooners and to perform a couple of his favorite songs from the era. Let's start with Russ Colombo's recording of Prisoner of Love.
Alone tonight you'll find me. Too weak to break the chains that bind me. I need no shackles to remind me. I'm just a prisoner of love. For one command I stand and wait now. From one who's master of my fate now. I can't escape, for it's too late now. I'm just a prisoner of love. What's the good of my caring if someone is sharing those arms with me? Although she has another, I can't have another, for I'm not free. She's in my dreams, awake or sleeping. Upon my knees to her I'm creeping. My very life is in her keeping. I'm just a prisoner of love.
Russ Colombo, recorded in 1931. Lenny Kaye, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, you're famous for playing with Patti Smith and for loving garage bands. What sent you back to the 20s and 30s, to early pop?
Well, I feel like I was sent there for a reason. I don't really know why. I was driving along one night, and I heard the story of Russ Colombo on the radio. It was pretty random. And he piqued my imagination. I was attracted to the circumstances of his passing, which were somewhat tabloid, and I liked the song, and I thought, well, here's someone I don't know anything about. What's his story? In a way, I feel like he chose me, actually, and the deeper I got into it, the more I felt like this was a period of music that wasn't recognized for the effect it had on the rest of music. It was kind of almost the beginnings of modern-day popular music. The microphone had just been invented. This kind of soft, intimate singing was possible, and the singing was very sensual, and it appealed to my sense of, curviness, I guess. In a sense, it's the same attraction that one has to rock and roll, only one, it's a lot louder. Rock and roll is a lot louder and more energetic. And I have to say there was some attraction in the fact that it was in rock and roll, that it was something new, that it was kind of a world that I could go to whenever, I could feel the tintinnabulation in my ear. It was kind of different.
I'm going to ask you to read a short excerpt from your new book, You Call It Madness. And this is a little bit about the newness of the microphone and how that was changing things.
Mm-hmm. The Romeo of song. Nothing too fast, mind you. All tempos decelerated for slow and sinuous dancing. A music for whispering in ears. For sliding out the slots in the bakelite, a glowing dial, and the warm, crackling, static hum of electricity. Russ didn't know about electric instruments. They hadn't been invented yet. Mere rumors and prototypes, if you didn't count the microphone. And he did, because it allowed him to sing softly, to mouth each word as it came out of his mouth, to send it just toward you, you, just the way you always wanted to hear it and experience it, how you always wished it would be, head back, eyes lidded, hand pressed inside your thigh, to reach that one moment of total real-time bliss in which something meaningful passes back and forth between your heart's flutter, to know how deep love can stick its tongue in your ear.
So you really got to thinking about what it was like to be a singer when the microphone was first invented and singing was changed forever.
And let's not forget when the radio was first invented.
Right, right.
I mean, this was a way, it kind of was, you needed both to suddenly create a sense of intimacy and going into people's homes and going into their private lives, essentially. It's not so different from what you do, Terry.
Without the singing. There's one line in your book, you write, "The microphones hide in the shrubbery in the foreground. There's something shameful about their presence, that they must be disguised to preserve an illusion." Were microphones often hidden early on?
Well, especially in films, you know, they were somewhat controversial, and I'm sure that the quality of microphone technology at the time was a little squawky. But it was regarded as somewhat artificial, in the same way that electric guitars, when they came along, were regarded as somewhat, you know, they weren't real. They weren't like acoustic instruments. I think part of the 20th century is understanding how important electricity is to the sound and texture of the times and the music that was created as a result of it.
Well, you've been performing with Patti Smith around the world lately, and you have Patti Smith has a new CD that you're on. But how has listening to crooners and writing about crooners changed the kind of performing you're doing on your own?
Well, for one, it awakened me to a lot of chords that rock and roll kind of sidesteps over. These songs are very complex. Some of the passing notes and passing tones are things that rock and roll kind of blew by in its quest for the classic 1-4-5 progression.
I'm really glad you say that, because so many people like dismiss the early pop of the 20s and 30s as being simple, Tin Pan Alley, Moon, June, Spoon. And musically,
well, simple,
yeah,
there's hardly.
Some pretty, yeah, thank you.
I mean, it takes me about a month to learn these songs, let me tell you. I try to get all the little inner chords.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it also helps you see it from the other side, what rock and roll must have looked like to people like, for instance, Les Paul or Bing Crosby, who kind of honed their craft in a different time. And then you have all these kids coming up with a very simplistic, almost common denominator, sense of melody and texture. And, you know, you could see that it was probably very shocking to them. I like seeing it from both ends. To me, what this book really helped me do is knit together pre-rock. I was pretty good starting in the late 40s understanding how rock and roll grew, but to take it back to the turn of last century was really quite an adventure. And you also begin to realize that the people who made this music, Bing Crosby, Rudy Valley, Russ Colombo, were as crazy and as driven and as scandalous in some ways as, you know, any rock star myth that you have. They weren't throwing televisions out the hotel windows because they hadn't been invented yet, but I'm sure when Bing Crosby had a snoot full, he tossed a radio out at least.
Well, you brought your guitar with you, for which I thank you very much. Would you perform one of the songs that you've been listening to that one of the crooners made famous?
Well, the first, when I started learning this this music and the people and the names and the characters and the great songs, I was especially drawn to what became Bing Crosby's theme song, Where the Blue of the Night Meets the Gold of the Day. And in the book, there's a really nice little event where Russ Colombo, even though he knows that Bing is ready to choose it as his theme song, decides to get the jump on Bing and record it 5 days before Bing records his version, resulting in the justly legendary Battle of the Baritones, which, if you lived in America in 1931, was, you know, your great feud, Bing versus Russ, at a time when Russ and Bing were probably neck and neck, and it wasn't apparent who was going to win the race to be America's most romantic singer. Where the Blue of the Night Meets the Gold of the Day. A truly, truly, truly beautiful song. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me, and the gold of her hair crowns the blue of her eyes like a halo, tenderly. If only I could see her, oh, how happy life could be. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me. Why must I live in dreams of the days I used to know? Why can't I find real peace of mind and return to the long ago? If only I could see her, oh, how happy life could be. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me.
Done by Lenny Kaye. That was wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
It's really, it's a beautiful music, and it's just a real honor and pleasure to be able to learn it and to place oneself in that time. I mean, when I was working on the book, I spent a lot of time in the library just kind of familiarizing myself with that moment, late 20s, 1928, 29 to 34, and I could, you know, get all the tabloid scandals, the murder mysteries. It was really fun. It was a time of the Lindbergh kidnapping. It was television had just kind of come over the horizon, though it wasn't there yet. The silence were moving into the talkies, resulting in much upheaval in Hollywood. The Ziegfeld Follies were kind of in their final glory. It was a really marvelous time, and I felt very pleased that I had the chance to understand it so completely and follow any tangent, really, that came up. I whistling records of the turn of the century, I spent a good few weeks learning about them. It's pretty amazing.
My guest is Lenny Kaye. His new book is called You Call It Madness, The Sensuous Song of the Croon. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Lenny Kaye. He's played guitar with Patti Smith since she started performing, and he produced the garage band anthology Nuggets. His new book, You Call It Madness, is about Russ Colombo and other crooners of the 1930s. I'm wondering if you hear early rock and rollers differently now, and if you hear a crooning influence in their voice that you didn't hear before. And I'm talking about the people who came of age before rock and roll but ended up performing it as the early performers. I'm thinking specifically of Elvis.
Well, to me, there would be no Elvis without Bing Crosby. Certainly, my love can understand you, you know, all that stuff. It's complete, complete Bing, and it's a kind of root that is, A, ironic because Bing Crosby hated Elvis, but also he said that Elvis never contributed anything to popular music. Well, that's, you know, one side of a generation gap.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, someone like Elvis, someone like Roy Orbison, the more romantic singers.
Let's hear another performer from the period. You write a lot about Rudy Vallee in your book.
And now there's a nut.
What do you find nutty about him?
Well, first of all, he was just a total girl hound. I mean, he was the kind of guy who would walk down the street and just, you know, keep running into telephone poles because he'd be craning his neck. Toward the end of his life, he wanted to write a book called Dolls of the Valley, where he talked about his conquests through the ages. But he's just a really funny guy, quite a character. And one of the funniest things I found in the book was his relationship with this woman named Faye Webb, who he married in 1931, about the same time that Russ came from California to New York. And, you know, his incredible, her infidelities, his infidelities, and their divorce proceedings, their getting back together proceedings. It really, he's a funny guy.
Before he sang with a microphone, Rudy Vallee used to sing with a megaphone. And that's like, if you know anything about Rudy Vallee, that's probably like the one thing
that's his stereotype.
That you know. And I remember, I think like when I was growing up in a lot of the old like Warner Brothers cartoons, there'd be a character mm-hmm. singing into a megaphone. What do you actually like about Rudy Vallee's singing?
Well, he has a beautiful voice for a start. It's a lot higher than Russ's baritone.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of almost like a precursor to what I call the croon, which is, to me, the croon is like wordless singing. It's singing that's beyond language. It's when you have so much in your heart to say that you can't say it in actual words. You have to go, ba-ba-ba-ba. It's like the language of love. Rudy Vallee had such a beautiful voice and such a great taste in song that you really, you know, his voice almost breaks down into its syllables. He's not as croon-oriented as Russ Colombo or Bing, and actually the croon became almost a cliche within 2 or 3 years of its invention. A crooner moved from being this thing that somebody thought of and invented, this kind of, it's almost like scat singing. Became like a kind of cliche, not unlike the movement of any genre, you know, where you have the breakthroughs where things are exciting and then people really understand it and kind of jump on the bandwagon and then it's time to move on to something else. But the heyday of the croon really is, it's the voice really as musical instrument. It's very understandable, even if you don't know what the singer is saying, because you can understand the tone, the notes, the inflections. And that to me is what the croon is about. It's this sense of higher language, the language that's so overflowing in your heart that you just have to break into song.
Well, let's hear a 1933 Rudy Vallee recording, and this is Orchids in the Moonlight. It's a song that was in the Fred Astaire movie Flying Down to Rio, but Rudy Vallee had the popular recording of it. So why don't we hear it?
When orchids bloom in the moonlight and lovers vow to be true, I can still dream in the moonlight of one dear night that we knew. When orchids fade in the dawning, they speak of tears and goodbye. Though my dreams are shattered like the petals scattered, still my love can never die. There is peace in the twilight when the day is but the shadows that fall only seem to recall all my longing for you. There's a dream in the moonbeams upon a sea of blue. But the moonbeams that fall only seem to recall love is all, love is you.
That's Rudy Valley, recorded in 1933, Orchids in the Moonlight, and my guest is Lenny Kaye. And although Lenny Kaye is best known as Patti Smith's guitarist, long-term guitarist, and also well-known for producing Nuggets, the garage band anthologies, his new book is about crooners of the 1930s. And the book is called You Call It Madness, The Sensuous Song of the Croon. And Rudy Valley, Russ Colombo, and Bing Crosby are three of the main characters in this book. So, Lenny, I'm wondering, was Rudy Valley a hard sell to your friends? I mean, when your friends were finding out that you were going home and listening to Rudy Valley records, did they think that was surprising?
That I lost my mind?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, most people didn't quite get
I like Rudy Valley. I should say that. I actually...
I like him, too. I think he's a very funny guy. But I really enjoyed, like, trailing these people because you know, you think of them as very grandfatherly and really they were young and wild and especially at this time when all this music was being invented. I particularly like Orchids in the Moonlight because one of the dominant themes in the book is the sense of the night. To me, crooning takes place after the sun goes down.
Lenny Kaye, his new book is called You Call It Madness. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Lenny Kaye. He's played guitar with Patti Smith since she started performing. He also produced the influential garage band anthology Nuggets. His new book, You Call It Madness, The Sensuous Song of the Croon, is about Russ Colombo and other crooners of the 1930s, like Bing Crosby and Rudy Valley. Here's Russ Colombo's 1931 recording, You Call It Madness, I Call It Love.
I can't forget the night I met you. That's all I'm dreaming of. And you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love. You made a promise to be faithful by all the stars above, and you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love. I keep repeating, my heart is beating for you constantly. You're all I'm needing, and so I'm pleading, please come back to me. You made a plaything out of romance. What do you know of love? And you call of madness. Ah, but I call it love.
When the crooner started singing romantic ballads in a much smaller voice than performers could have had before, because that small voice couldn't fill a big theater.
Right.
Was that kind of smaller, almost whispery, romantic voice ever seen as effeminate?
Yes, it was, and very much so. In fact, someone like Rudolph Valentino, who was regarded as probably the most romantic figure of the early 1920s, in fact, Russ Colombo was often called the Valentino of song. There was quite a scandal about him, whether he was effeminate, and you know, even when he wore a wristwatch, this was an effeminate symbol. To me, the croon is the male singing to the female in her language. It requires a sense of becoming female, of bending the knee to the female. You know, we're dealing in kind of strange stereotypes here and kind of gender characteristics, but I think, to me, what someone like Russ Colombo did was sing to a woman in her own language, and then he has permission to enter her world.
Early in the interview, you said one of the things that first interested you in Russ Colombo, and this is what led you into this whole era of the crooner, was finding out the kind of tabloid circumstances behind his death. Tell us the story of how he died.
Well, you couldn't make it up. I mean, that's what really impressed me the first time I heard it. He's visiting a friend of his. He's about to marry, perhaps, the actress Carol Lombard, who would call him the love of her life, even after she was with Clark Gable. His first starring movie was about to be released. He had gone to the preview. And he went over to visit a friend of his, a Hollywood photographer named Lansing Brown, and on the table are two antique dueling pistols. During the course of this conversation, Lansing lights a match in the percussion pen of one of these dueling pistols. There's a sudden explosion. A long-forgotten bullet explodes, ricochets off the table, and strikes Russ Colombo in the left eye. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm just imagining that bullet waiting there for 60 or 70 years for its moment, and Russ Colombo being in the exact place for that bullet to strike him. The hindsight of fate is how I refer to it. It's pretty spooky. And then I hear, as this announcer is talking, of that because his mother was very ill when he suddenly died, they kept his death from her, and for the next 10 years, they would write letters from all over the world to her saying, "Dear Mom, I'm in Barcelona. I'm held over. I'm going to Paris. Hope to be home for Christmas, but maybe not." And for 10 years, they like sent these letters from him, kind of from the beyond. And that also, I thought, wow, that's so strange. It's like having a lifeline past your own lifeline.
How old was he when he was shot?
26.
It's really young.
Really young, and had lived quite a life. Had come to New York, got on the radio, been a big star, lost his money, gained his money, participated in the era. One of the things I liked about Russ was that he kind of moved through the major cultural moment, kind of attracting personalities to him. Benny Goodman, before Benny Goodman was the king of swing, organized a band for Russ, so I could see exactly what it was that Benny Goodman did that made him so important in American culture. These are things that I didn't know when I started. I wanted to see what Benny Goodman was like in 1932 and what made him, you know, gather the bare bones of swing together and really become the king of the music of the late 30s.
Well, Lenny, I'd love to close with a song. Would you perform another one for us?
I'd like to. I thought I would do, since we did a song of Bing's and a song of Russ's, this is a song that, well, all of them recorded, but Rudy Valli was the one that snagged a piece of the publishing. I'm not sure that he deserved it, but that was in those days, you know. If you introduced a song, you could put your name on the writer's credit. And this is really a beautiful song. It kind of closes just about any show. It's called "Good Night, Sweetheart." And I'm sure you've heard it. This is almost in the common currency.
Good night, sweetheart, till we meet tomorrow. Good night, sweetheart, sleep will banish sorrow. Tears and parting may make us forlorn, but with the dawn, a new day is born. So I'll say, good night, sweetheart, though I'm not beside you. Good night, sweetheart, still my love will guide you. Dreams enfold you, in each one I will hold you. So good night, sweetheart, good night.
Lenny Kaye, thank you so much.
Oh, it's a total pleasure, Terry. I really, I like revealing this world. It's very sweet, and there's something very warming about it.
Lenny Kaye's new book is called You Call It Madness, The Sensuous Song of the Croon.